It's a certainly a pleasure. Appreciate the opportunity to be here with you. And I bring to you the greetings from the brethren who are in Payette. And I understand that they are in the process of hearing a good lesson from Jim Bauman. And then tomorrow night from Brother Cox. And then Sunday morning, I get to do the one I'm doing here this evening. And being assigned the subject of David it's always a pleasure, because David is a great, great character as far as the Bible is concerned. And the problem there is that as you look at everything that David did and everything he was involved in and everything that he means and everything that's portrayed prophetically in him, it would take probably a week to cover all that material. Which I was tempted to do that, but I decided I would do something a little shorter. So here's what I'm going to do. I want to talk about David, but I'm not going to talk about David so much directly. I'm going to talk about somebody else. But I am talking about David, so don't think I missed the subject. I'm going to talk about a man by the name of Joab. I don't know. I've never heard a sermon on Joab. I don't know. Maybe you have. I've never done one on Joab. He's a fascinating character in the Old Testament, and sort of the right-hand man as far as David was concerned in many instances and many ways, although not always. So I'm going to draw a comparison. I'm going to take a look at David by taking a look at Joab. And I think you'll find it interesting, at least I do. Well, let's first of all notice here, as far as David is concerned, he is a very special character. And special things are said out about him. You know, he's a man after God's own heart. And you just find a better compliment or a better thing to be said than that. David is a man after God's own heart. God loved David. David served God, did the will of God the best that he could, and floundered sometimes because of his humanity, but he certainly is a very special character in the Bible. But there are things about David that were just normal, and he shares those normal things with Joab. And let's look at the things about David as far as what we learn about him. First of all, we discover that his lineage is nothing special. It's good, it's respectable, it's distinguished. He has good people that are in his genealogy. I'm reading out of the book of Ruth, and the fourth chapter, and Ruth is just a great story to tell there, because you get the point of Ruth, because at the end of the book of Ruth, you find out that the whole thing is pointing toward David. And so it says here in the book of Ruth, chapter 4, and in verse 18, that these are the generations of Perez. And to Perez was born Hezron. And to Hezron was born Ram. And to Ram, Amminadab. And to Amminadab was born Nashon. And to Nashon, Salmon. And to Salmon was born Boaz. And to Boaz, Obed. And to Obed was born Jesse. And to Jesse, David. So it's a typical genealogy. Follows it all the way back to Judah. Perez was a son of Judah, and follows it down that they're all mentioned, they're all remembered, they're basically, you know, respectable people in the genealogy, passed on from family to family, and you know how that works when you have a family situation, that you tend to pass your values and your morals and your standards, you pass those on to your sons and your daughters. And they in turn then will pass them on to their sons and their daughters. And David then is found in that particular lineage. Now the thing is that David did possess a particular special quality. And that comes out, you recall, when Samuel was sent to find a king to replace Saul. And he was sent over to the house of Obed. And he was sent there, and then he begins to look at all the sons that were to be found there. I read, for example, in 1 Samuel chapter 16, and in the first verse, where the Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you grieve over Saul, since I have rejected him from being king over Israel. Fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have selected a king for myself among his sons." And so Samuel went then to anoint one of the sons in the household of Jesse. And you remember the problem that he had, you read about here in 1 Samuel 16, is that they started bringing the sons forth before Samuel, and he thought, this got to be the guy. He just really looks great. God says, no, that's not the one. He says, I'll tell you the one that I want. Went through all the sons until finally he says, well, do you have another son? And then finally, David is the one who would be brought forth. I've selected here the third verse where it says, you shall invite, in the third verse where he said, you invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I'll show you what you shall do. And you shall anoint for me the one whom I designate to you. God's going to make that choice. So God's evaluating these individuals that Samuel is to look at, that he is to ordain and anoint to become the successive king. And then as we drop down into the seventh verse, "But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have rejected him," the previous one, says, "for God sees not as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." And so here's where it comes down to say, there's something special about David. And that is, it didn't appear as far as looking at him by outward appearance was concerned. Outwardly, I suppose, these were a fine set of brothers that the house there had presented before Samuel. But God was looking at a different aspect. He was looking inwardly. He was looking at what the man was on the inside. And so the first thing we see is that God selected David. Why? Because he saw something special about David. There's something unique about him, and that's the one that God had chosen. That's the one that he wanted. In the New Testament, citing the passage that I mentioned a moment ago, it's in Acts chapter 13, verse 22, where it said, God said, "I found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart." He said, "who will do all my will." That's what God was looking at in his heart. Here was a man that would do all his will. Now, I think we're going to be able to elaborate upon that a little bit in the lesson to come. But as I said, instead of looking directly at David, I want to look at another character here. We talked about David's lineage, and David's lineage was, you know, from Judah and down through Obed and finally Jesse and then the ones that were born there. You do find that Joab has the same genealogy, identical. He's a close relative as far as that goes. As far as that goes, Joab is David's nephew. He is the son of David's sister, Zariah. And so amongst all those sons that you have then, Zariah, and this is mentioned in, we won't look at that, 1 Chronicles chapter 2 and verse 16 and some other places that you may have seen before. And what this tells us is, and the way the story works, is that Joab and his two brothers, he had two other brothers, Abishai and Asahel. And these three boys were about the same age as David, even though he's their uncle and they were the nephews. They probably were about the same age. And, you know, you can think about it, just the idea that out of the seven sons that were born, that basically, you know, sons had a little priority as far as their birth is concerned. And them wanting another child, they probably did not have the daughter as being the last child. So the Zariah was, no, and David was younger than the other boys. Zariah probably fit in between the other boys there somewhere. And so when she had a child, it could very well have been about the same age then as David being born. It's not unusual. My son Nick is older than some of his nephews and nieces. So it's very, very normal, happens, and they treat one another like cousins, you know, and this kind of thing. So, but anyway, here is Joab. He has an identical family genealogy. So he's brought up with the same family standards. He's brought up in the same environment. He's brought up in the very company of David. They probably grew up together. They probably were friends and children together and grew up and into adulthood together, probably growing up as companions. As a matter of fact, it did become a lifetime association that they would have, and that Joab would be beside David until after David died, and then in the days of Solomon, that Joab's last breath would have been breathed. It was a life that Joab had that was very distinguished. He was a man that had great talent, and he earned the respect of David, and David admired him and promoted him and depended upon him for many, many years. And it all started back in the time when David, you know, fell out of favor with Saul, and Saul, then being jealous of David, decided that David needed to die, and so David had to flee for his life, and was out dwelling in the wilderness and kind of hiding away from the general population. And then David began attracting to him certain, maybe some outcasts and some misfits. And so he then began gathering a band of fellows who joined with him. But in the midst of that, you find that when David was being pursued, and he was out there in hardship, and he was in danger of his life, that then we find that Joab and Asahel and Abishai, they show up with David. So they come to David when David's suffering this hardship, and then they stood beside David, and David then drew upon the talent and the strength and the courage that these men had, and which he probably learned to trust in them from the time that they were children and in their growing up. So they then began to accompany him. And Joab began to exhibit certain outstanding characteristics. He was a brave man. He was really a good warrior. And brave and smart, and he was a good military leader. We'll give you some illustrations of that just to get in your mind the kind of a man that Joab was. It's mentioned of Joab in 1 Chronicles chapter 11. We won't go over there and read that. It would be too much to look up and read here. But David made the statement there they were going to try to conquer the city of Jebus, which would become Jerusalem. And the Jebusites were a particular tough set of warriors and defended that city, and nobody could get in there and get after them. And David then made a claim to his men that he said, whoever strikes down a Jebusite first is going to be chief and commander. And Joab was the man to do that. Joab was the man to put his life in danger and attack the Jebusites, and the first one to slay one of the Jebusite warriors. Well, lawyers, might have been lawyers or two. And he slayed one, and because David had made the promise there, that then Joab was promoted then to become the chief and the commander of David's forces. And this was long before David actually became, that accepted the reign as king. He was anointed, but Saul was still alive at that time. And so in 2 Samuel chapter 8, and in the 16th verse, it points out then that Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was over the army. And Jehoshaphat, the son of Eliab, was the recorder. So he became the commander, basically, of the army. He would answer only to David as far as that goes. And he was a man, as we said, that exercised leadership. He exercised courage. And he exercised faith. He was not a man that without faith. He had the same kind of faith that you would expect to find in David and from the family and their upbringing and all of that. It's illustrated well of this in the book of 2 Samuel chapter 10. Here was a conflict that arose against David by the Ammonites. And they insulted David's people, and that made David say, well, we'll have to do something about that. And so he set out for the Ammonite city. And they knew he was coming, and so they prepared a surprise for him. And that is, they hired about 30,000 Syrian mercenaries to come down and fight on their side. And what they did was, they pretended like they came out of the city to meet Joab and his army, but they had 30,000 Syrians that were hiding. And when they engaged the Ammonites, then here comes 30,000 out behind them, and so they're getting it from both sides, which, as you know, is probably the worst kind of a condition militarily that you can find yourself in, and almost instantly is going to guarantee defeat. But here it tells how that Joab reacted to this. He's not a man that panicked. He's not a man that's going to surrender. He's a man that's going to rally his soldiers, and he's going to array them in the proper way and set them up so that they have a chance to win that battle. And I want you to look at how this plays itself out. Let's see, in 2 Samuel chapter 10, let's look at verse 9. It says, when Joab saw that the battle was set against him in front and in the rear, he selected from all the choice men of Israel and arrayed them against the Arameans. That would be the Syrians. But the remainder of the people he placed in the hand of Abishai, his brother, and he arrayed them against the sons of Ammon. And he said, if the Arameans are too strong for me, then you will help me. But if the sons of Ammon are too strong for you, then I will come to you. Which is a sound military strategy, I understand. And that is that he arrayed his forces, he divided them up against the enemy as they were coming. And then he said to his commander in chief over here, he said, all right, says, this is what we'll do. You fight your battle here, we'll fight the battle over here. Now, if things become too strong for you over there, then you signal us and I'll send some of my men over there to assist you. And likewise, if I get in trouble, then I will call you. And you will then assign some of your men to come over here and reinforce our side over here. And so he was a good military leader. He arrayed his men in the proper way. And then he encouraged his men as only a good leader can do, and as a faithful man will do. Great, great statement here in verse 12. And he said, be strong. Let's show ourselves courageous for the sake of our people, for the cities of our God, and may the Lord do what is good in his sight. And then they engaged the battle. And you highlight that passage. That's a good one, isn't it? Boy, that's a man of faith. That's a man of courage. That's a man that can rally his men and get the best out of them. And of course, what happens is that because of this, they were able to win that battle. That they defeated the Syrians and they had to flee, and the Ammonites saw that they all was lost, and so it turned out to be quite a victory for the people of God. So, in that way, he was really a dependable, a very profitable associate of David's, and David really depended upon him and his brothers there to do the things that he had to do in uniting and establishing the kingdom of God. Now, what I want you to see about Joab is that something began to happen to Joab, something very distasteful, and that is that Joab began to be hardened. And you know how the statement goes, and it's true. Hard times make for hard men. And you take a man now that's got a sword in his hand from morning till night, and he's killing people, and he's standing in blood, and he's fighting and putting his life on the line, and he's killing and seeing people around him being killed. And he does that day after day, and day after day is the kind of life that he's living. And it was almost inevitable that finally he started losing some of the niceties of civilization. And he became a hard man, a hardened man. And let me illustrate to you. This is not just with Joab. It would be the same with others that were round about them. There was a time after Saul's death when the kingdom was still divided. The son of Saul had Abner, the commander of the army, was trying to keep him on the throne. And then David had Joab as the commander of his army, and they were trying to establish and unite the Israelites to become a single kingdom. So it was quite a struggle. Basically, then Abner and Joab would meet each other on the battlefield often, and they knew each other, and they had many, many battles. And in this one particular time that they gathered their warriors together, as they gathered together before they engaged into the battle, this interesting thing happened. And it's a cruel event. In 2 Samuel chapter 2, and in the 14th verse, that you see that Abner said to Joab, Joab says, let's let the young men arise and hold a contest before us. Joab said, "Let them arise." Now, these guys have come out to fight a battle. But before the battle starts, Abner and Joab, the two commanders here, they said, "Let's have a game. Okay, let's get our young fellows out here and let's have a game that'll be interesting and fun for us to watch." And what kind of a game was it? Well, you read on into verse 15 and 16, and it's described like this. Let's see, let me find my place here. I turned the page and lost my place. 2 Samuel chapter 2, verse 15 and 16. And it says, "So they arose and went over by count, 12 for Benjamin," yes, this is the one I want, "and Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and 12 of the servants of David. And each one of them seized his opponent by the head and thrust his sword in his opponent's side, so they fell down together. Therefore, that place was called Helkath Hazurim," which is in Gibeon. Evidently, it goes like this. You get 12 young men that want to prove themselves. And they meet 12 men from the other side, and they don't just go out and start the fight. They go out and they grab each other by the head. So they have them by the head, and they have the sword in their hand. And then whenever they're given the signal, then they try to kill their opponent. And of course, you know what happened. They all killed each other. There was no defense for it, and they all died. And that was, folks, that was a game. That was something fun to watch. That was something that amused Abner and Joab. These were hard men. These were men that are losing the sensitivities and the value of what life is about and what these young men were giving up and what they did and everything, and they could sit there and enjoy that. However, this became an incident that happened that would have caused an enmity between Joab and Abner. And that is, after this particular incident, then they engaged in their battle that they'd come out for. And Joab and his army then gained the advantage. And we read and just ensuing as to how this went on. It tells how in chapter 2 and in the 19th verse we might look at, that Asahel pursued Abner and did not turn to the right or to the left from following Abner. Asahel is the younger brother of Joab. And he spotted Abner on the battlefield as they gained the advantage. Abner and his men turned, decided they would go and find a better piece of ground to fight from. They had lost several men, and so they turned around and they ran. And of course, what you do then is you chase after them. And you see if perhaps you can catch some of them and kill them while they're in disarray. Well, Asahel spotted Abner. And Asahel could run like a deer. And so he chased after Abner. And Abner saw him behind him and chasing him. And he realized he can't outrun this young man, that he's going to gain on him. And so he would turn around, call to him. He'd say, "Turn around." He says, "You don't want to catch me." He says, "Stay back. Go find somebody else to kill." He says, "Don't follow after me. I'm warning you." Asahel wouldn't give up. He was a brave young man, and he was determined. Maybe this is moment, opportunity for glory that he would be able to achieve. And so it says that he refused to give up the chase. And in verse 23, it says that, however, he refused to turn aside. And therefore, Abner struck him in the belly with the butt end of the spear, so that the spear came out at his back, and he fell there and died on the spot. And so when Asahel caught up to him and was coming to him, he took his spear and he just took the butt end of the spear and caught him in the stomach and pierced his stomach through. Abner evidently couldn't run fast, but he was a strong man. And he killed him right there on the spot. So he killed Joab's little brother. Okay, then the battle stopped. And what you're going to find out about Joab is Joab holds a grudge. That follows him the rest of his life. He wants to get even. Anybody who does something that he dislikes or something he counts as being against him, then his goal in life is to get even. And he's a man who can do that, and he can do it efficiently. For that matter, then, he had this grudge against Abner. And as David, as we said, David's trying to combine the kingdom. He didn't like the idea that the northern Israelites were fighting with the tribe of Judah with David, and brother was killing brother, so to speak. And he wanted to unite it. And finally, Abner saw some weaknesses and failings in the sons of Saul, who was the king he was defending. And so Abner then came and talked to David, and he says, David, I can deliver the kingdom to you. If I come to you and my army comes to you, then he says, all of Israel will come to you, and the kingdom will be united, and there will be peace, and all this fighting and killing can stop. And of course, David, basically a man of peace, David said, that's what we'll do. He says, that's what we'll do. And he made the agreement to Abner. He says, you do that, we'll accept it. You go back, and then you come back here, and we'll unite the kingdom and do that together. So he made that agreement with Abner. However, when he made that agreement, Joab wasn't there. But when Joab came back, then what Joab found out that Abner had been there, and that David had let him go in peace, and so he then rebuked David for doing that. And then Joab took it upon himself, and he sent a messenger after Abner. And we can read a few. Let's select a verse or two here in verse 26 of 2 Samuel chapter 3. It says, when Joab came out from David, he sent messengers after Abner, and they brought him back from the well of Sirah. But David did not know it. So when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside into the middle of the gate to speak with him privately, and there he struck him in the belly so that he died on account of the blood of Asahel, his brother. So he sent a messenger after Abner and says, Abner, come back, so I need to talk to you. He came back and says, look, let's step over here and we'll talk. And Abner, thinking it's going to be a talk of peace, but he went over there and it says he struck him in the belly. Well, that's how Abner had killed his brother. And so he killed Abner. When Abner was striving to unite the kingdom with David, he knew what Abner was doing. He knew that David had agreed to it, but he had this grudge against him, and his grudge was the most important thing, and he took the man aside, not in noble combat or anything like that. He took him under the guise of peace, and then he surprisingly just killed him. And he was efficient at doing that. And so that's the kind of the man. And say, he is becoming a hard, vicious man because of the life that he was living. And so David had to struggle with that and go ahead and deal with the people and tell them. He says, that's not my fault. That's not what I wanted to do. Joab took that on himself. And he says, he wanted to unite the kingdom. And they ultimately were able then, in spite of Joab, to unite that kingdom together. But here's something now that David says is kind of eye-opening in 2 Samuel chapter 3 and in the 39th verse that David said, I am weak today, though anointed king, and these men, the sons of Zeruiah, are too difficult for me. Some of your translations, he said, these men are too hard for me. I can't control them. I can't deal with them. There's something there where David does not have the power as the king, say, okay, Joab, take him out and kill him. You know, he broke the law. He didn't have that power. Joab had too much influence. And David had to just deal with him. And then he bemoans the fact here of his lifetime friends and his brothers that he says, these sons of Zeruiah are too hard for me. They were hardened. They had become hard, and they were too hard. David couldn't even control them himself. And so they were still useful. They'd still be around. But David knew from that time forward that Joab's going to do what Joab wants to do. And if it agrees with what the king wants to do, it's going to be done. It's going to be done well. If it doesn't, then you may well have trouble on your hand. So David then recognized that. Not only that, then as David, you remember the life of David, how that David, one flaw that David had, I think, is that he wasn't a really good dad. You know, he had children that he hadn't had the time to really father them, and different wives and different children, and they had conflicts between one another. And Absalom was so severe in that David had been alienated from him for a while. And then Absalom, David's son, finally was allowed to come back and to dwell in the land there. But David just wouldn't have anything to do with him. And so finally, Absalom decided he would ask Joab to go and talk to David on his behalf. And so he sent the messenger to Joab. Joab just ignored him. Sent another messenger to him. Joab, he wouldn't even answer him. So Absalom, being the kind of character he was, basically made the mistake of his life. He tells his servants, all right, Joab owns the property next to me. You go set his field afire. So they go and they burned up his field of wheat or whatever it was. And then when Joab comes back, there's his field is burned down. And he knows that Absalom did it. So now he goes to Absalom because Absalom's saying, hey, I told you to come talk to me. You don't come talk to me, I'm going to burn you out. So come and talk to me. So Joab did come and talk to him. And he said, go and talk to David. Get me reunited with David. And Joab did go and talk to David. And David then accept Absalom and bring Absalom back into his good grace. Well, then you know what happened to there. I mean, David's story is so sometimes just filled with so much sorrow and heartbreak that Absalom now in the good grace of David, remember, he began to compete with David for the favor of the people. And finally, he became so popular that he got a phone call. Sorry about that. Nick, shut that thing off. Or break it or something. I'm sorry. All right. So anyway, let's see, where was I? Absalom was making a phone call, wasn't he? Oh, yeah. And so Absalom, he got so popular that he raised a rebellion and was going to take over the kingdom. And he even would have killed David. And so David, you know, by the skin of his chinny chin chin, he had to escape Jerusalem. He took his men with him. They had to flee from Jerusalem. And Absalom actually came and established himself in Jerusalem. He's going to be the king. But they knew that David, they had to get him out of the way. So they said, we've got to find David and we've got to kill him. But he's got these fighting men with him who've been fighting all their lives. It's not going to be easy. So they, through various events, gathered all their men, a great number of men, and they went out to go to battle against David. And David's men would not permit David, he's getting a little old at that time, to go out to the battle. And so David said, okay, Joab, you and your brother and a third man, you take our forces out and you meet the army of Absalom. But then he made this condition to them. And that condition was that he said, and don't cause any harm to Absalom. And that was not a good decision on David's part because Absalom certainly intended harm to David and to anybody else he had. And it would put people at a disadvantage when they have to go out and fight the battle and they have to be careful, don't hurt Absalom. They all heard it and they all knew what David the king had said. And so they went out, and in the course of the battle, you remember that Absalom really could grow a head of hair. His hair would grow so fast and so beautiful that once a year he'd shave it off and the whole community would come around and they would weigh it. Okay, I mean, this guy had a head of hair. Well, that was his downfall. As he was riding his mule out through the forest in the course of the battle, his hair got caught in the tree, the mule ran out from under him, and there he was hanging helpless from the tree. And one of the soldiers of Joab found him and came and told Joab. Joab said, well, why didn't you kill him? He said, well, because David said you better not hurt him. And so Joab took a spear and he went and he killed Absalom while he's hanging from the tree. This is not a noble man. He didn't care about noble combat or equal fighting or give a man a chance or anything. And I'm thinking that when he came and there was Absalom hanging and Joab showed up with a spear in his hand, my guess is that Joab said, remember that field that you burned? Now we're getting even. It didn't matter what David said. It didn't matter it was David's son. It didn't matter to him. He killed him. And he killed him there hanging helpless in excuse me, hanging in that tree. So David then, of course, he is upset. As he said, these guys are too hard for me. But what David did do was that he took a man by the name of Amasa, who was the commander of Absalom's army, and he says, all right, to make peace here, Amasa, I want you to be the commander of my army, and Joab, you're out. So he made Amasa. Now, who was Amasa? Well, Amasa was another nephew of David's. He was the son of David's other sister, Abigail. Okay, see how these things suggest. And so he, no doubt, was one who grew up. They knew each other. They'd been around each other. And so David said, I can trust you. You become the commander here of the army. And Joab, you, whatever, going to have to do something else there. All right, now look, Joab doesn't take anything lightly, does he? It came to pass then that David had to send out his army to deal with a problem that had come up in the kingdom. And so he sent for Amasa to do it and go up and to do something. And Amasa went on that journey, and he's supposed to be back, I think, in 3 days. He didn't show up right away. And so David said, well, we've got to do something about this, so you guys, you go out. We've got to go up there and take care of that situation. Well, as they set out, then Amasa shows up. And he meets there on the highway. He meets with Joab and Joab's brother and the armed men that were going to do what Amasa is supposed to be the leader to do there. And so they met there. Now it's Joab's cousin. Joab knows the man. It's probably a lifetime acquaintance that he has with him. And here is the manner in which that came out. And this is all recorded here in 2 Samuel chapter 19. And let's see. Well, 2 Samuel chapter 20. And it'll be in verses 8 through 10. But because of time here, I'm just going to tell you the story. And then you read it if you're not already familiar with it. So Joab meets Amasa coming back to be the leader of this armed contingent that's going out on the mission for David. And he's a cousin. And so Joab sees him and he greets the man. And he comes, because he's his cousin, says, hi, you know, and he comes out and he's going to greet him. But as he steps forward, he's carrying his military armor and everything on. As he steps forward to meet him, well, his sword falls out of the scabbard. Joab's sword falls to the ground. So Joab reaches down with his left hand and he picks his sword up. He's a right-handed man. And he reaches out here and he takes a hold of and greets Amasa with his right hand, which, of course, a gesture of peace, because that's your weapon hand. And he take hold of him with his right hand, and he killed him with his left hand and cut his bowels out right there on the road and right in front of everybody. They all saw it, and he lay there and died right in front of everybody. And then without a wink of an eye, Joab just takes control of the armed men, and he goes on, and he does what he had come to do. So he has become a very wicked, a dangerous, and obstinate, and an obstacle in front of David now, which David doesn't really know how to deal with the man, and he would be there. And here's an interesting thing, is that whenever David died, or about to die, and Samuel is to be the successor to David's throne, Solomon is to be the successor to David's throne. And so David calls his son Solomon to him, and he gives him some words of guidance as to how he should proceed there to establish the kingdom and what kind of a king that he should be. And so there's a good passage to look at here. It's found over in the book of 1 Kings, chapter 2. And when David gives this instruction to his son Solomon, let's see if I can turn to that quickly. 1 Kings chapter 2. And let's see, verse 5, let's read verse 5 and 6 of 1 Kings chapter 2. 1 Kings 2, verse 5 and 6. And so David then, in giving instruction to Solomon as to how to make the kingdom strong and how he should reign, then he says in verse 5, he says, "Now, you also know what Joab, the son of Zeruiah, did to me, what he did to the two commanders of the armies of Israel, to Abner, the son of Ner, and to Amasa, the son of Jether, whom he killed. He also shed the blood of war in peace, and he put the blood of war on his belt, about his waist, and on his sandals, and on his feet." So he says unto to Solomon, "Now act according to your wisdom. Do not let his gray hair go down to Sheol in peace." Which means the first thing you better do is see that Joab dies. You don't want that man around. He's dangerous. And Solomon, the young man that he was, certainly would not be able to deal with him. And as you recall from that, there was a man by the name of Benaiah, whom I wish another sermon could be preached about. One of the mighty men of David. He was always there. He's always in the background. Never troubled anybody. Did whatever needed to be done. And Solomon told him, "Go out and kill Joab." Joab wasn't afraid of anybody except Benaiah. And Benaiah found him at the altar of God, and he came back and says, "What will I do?" And Solomon said, "Kill him." And so he went, and Benaiah then killed him, took his life. But you see, that's how dangerous Joab had become. And that David knew Solomon could not reign as long as Joab was alive. And so he had to be removed. Okay, that's a depressing story, isn't it? Now I'm talking about David. All right, let's talk about David. David had the same family makeup that Joab had. He had the same upbringing. He grew up in the same environment. He fought the same number of battles. He shed the same amount of blood. He had everything in his experience right down the line. Everything that happened to Joab also happened to David. But David ends up being one of the most spiritually minded men that you find in all the Bible. And Joab ended up being one of the most vicious, evil men that you're going to find in the Bible. But everything else was the same. And so the question that you've got to ask is, and the question that's going to be helpful to us, in which we should have a lot of time to answer the question, but we don't. But I'll give you some suggestions and maybe something you'll think about in the future. Why is it that David was so different from Joab? What was there about David? What was there about his life that kept him from being another Joab? Okay. Why? What happened? Or what didn't happen? What went on? And I'm going to give you a reason. Matter of fact, I'm going to give you 150 reasons. It's called the Book of Psalms. Because the Book of Psalms allows you to look into David's heart. You get to see what was going on inside of David. When all of these things on the outside were going that ended up the ruin of Joab, the Book of Psalms reveals what was going on in David's heart. So I said there's 150 of those reasons. And believe it or not, I counted them up today and there's 2,511 verses that are there. Do you think David ever read those Psalms? Do you think he ever read them often? Do you think he had any of them memorized? You know, he wrote many of them. He collected the rest of them. I'm sure there's not a psalm in there that David wasn't familiar with, if not directly having authored it. The Psalms. That gives us a glimpse into David's heart, what kind of a man that David was. Now, for example, let's say they've got a long day of battle and it's been very vicious. Maybe it hasn't gone good for them because David was at a disadvantage, for example, against Saul. Because David wouldn't kill Saul. He'd rather run away, and he would be chased, and he would be outlawed, and he would be endangered. He would have to take care of his men and go out and spend a long day in the heat and the dust and the sweat and barely escape. And then at nightfall that comes down, they find a place to lie down in their fatigue, and they're laying there in the middle of the night trying to rest up for whatever's going to happen the next day. And what do you suppose that Joab is thinking as he's resting up that night? Well, I would say that Joab is still laying there in the dark. You can hear him sharpening his sword. Sharpening his sword, okay? I would suspect that you could hear him there maybe muttering to himself, saying, you know, we can do better. We can kill him better, or we can do this. Or maybe this guy, you know, I'm going to go out and get him tomorrow or something. This would be the thought in his heart. Always, constantly, he wore the blood of war on his belt and on his sandals. That's the man that he was and the man that he had become. So in the middle of the night, that's Joab. But in the middle of the night, what's David? And so I look through the book of Psalms, and it's really fascinating to me. I'm trying to put these psalms into real life, you know, not a thing where David gets, you know, comes into the temple and say, I wonder what psalm I could do today. This one might be appropriate here. I'd always love this one, and select a psalm or something. I'm thinking of David now, who's out in the wilderness and in the middle of the night, laying there on a rock in his exhaustion, and he's looking up at the stars that are up in heaven. And you say, what do you suppose is in David's heart and in his mind? Well, let me make a suggestion. Let's read in the book of Psalms, let's read the 19th Psalm. This is what goes on in David's heart in a time of trouble, in a time of trial. And at the end of that day, he's looking up at the stars up in heaven, and he's saying, the heavens are telling of the glory of God, and their expanse is declaring the work of his hands. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night reveals knowledge. There's no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard. Their line has gone out through all the earth, and their utterances to the end of the world. In them he has placed a tent for the sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber. It rejoices as a strong man to run his course. Its risings from one end of the heavens, its circuit to the other end of them, and there's nothing hidden from its heat. The law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true. They are righteous altogether. They are more desirable than gold, yes, than much fine gold, sweeter also than honey and the drippings of the honeycomb. And moreover, by them your servant is warned. In keeping them there is great reward. Who can discern his errors? Acquit me of hidden faults, and also keep back your servant from presumptuous sins. Let them not rule over me, and then I will be blameless, and I shall be acquitted of great transgression. Don't you wish Joab would have had that psalm in his heart? Keep your servant from presumptuous sins. He didn't, but David did. David had that in his heart. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my rock and my redeemer. And that's the part of David that God looked at when he found David and had him to be anointed to be king. That's the kind of thing that was in David's heart. That is what is there and was blessing him. You know, when David had his match with Goliath, as a young man, might even been a teenager, who knows, young man. And you remember, everybody was afraid to fight Goliath, and David appeared, and I guess Saul said, hey, what's not much to lose here, send him out there. So David picked up, 6 smooth stones out of the creek? 5 smooth stones? Okay, 5 stones. Which proves what? David was not a crack shot with a slingshot. He was not a crack shot. If he was, he only picked up 1. He picked up 5. He figured, I'll get off at least 5 shots before that guy gets a hold of me. Okay. So he set out, and he's going down. He's going to put his life on the line against this immense, monstrous-looking guy that's standing down there with it takes one man to come along just to carry his spear for him. And as he's walking down the hillside and coming to get within fighting distance of this great man, what do you think was in David's heart? What was he thinking? What's he going on? Is he planning strategy? No. He's got 5 stones. That's probably all chance he's going to have. He doesn't know what's going to happen. But I'll tell you what's in his heart. You know where this is from? The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You've anointed my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Okay? That's the kind of thing that's in David's heart. That's why it only took one shot to get Goliath. That's why David could endure all the things that he and Joab and all those other men endured all the lifetime. That's why David could endure those things and not become a hard man. He stayed always a man of God. And you know what? We come down into the New Testament. Is that not the message for us all? And that is that Christians then are to turn away from the influences of the world. And in turning away from that, that we are to set ourselves to doing the will of God. And doing it. I mean, Acts chapter 2 is a good example. It fascinates me here. In Acts chapter 2, and I'm bringing the lesson to a close, so take a deep breath and we'll make it. In Acts chapter 2, you know where the Apostle Peter preached that first gospel sermon. and it tells how in Acts chapter 2 that when the people heard that message, it says in verse 41, so those that had received his word were baptized, and that day there were added about 3,000 souls. So here's some that saved. They received the gospel of Christ. They were baptized in the name of Jesus for the remission of their sins. And now, what happens next? Now, you keep in mind, these people all had things to do. They all had places to be. They all had activities they wanted to be involved in. These people didn't sit around. You can't picture these people in Jerusalem and say, you know, those people really had nothing to do. They were sitting around. They were bored out of their minds. And then Peter came along and they were baptized into Christ. And so they said, well, great. We finally got something to do. And so it says in verse 42, they continually devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Do you not know that they had to quit doing stuff to start doing that? And when they were doing that, they were doing just as David did. They were turning their heart away from the world, which will harden them and which will destroy them. And they're turning it now, and they're going to fill their hearts with things that pertain to God. And so they continually devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and to the breaking of bread and to prayer. And that's what's going on in their heart. And that's why that church in Jerusalem grew. That's why that church in Jerusalem, when it finally was scattered, that everywhere they went about preaching the word. Because they turned their hearts to God. They turned them away from the world and the influence of the world and the hardness of the world, and they'd be touched by the word of God, and they begin to accomplish the greatest thing this world has ever seen, and is a blessing as to why you and I are able to stand here this evening, is because those very first brethren opened up their hearts to God's word. And that's what we should do. Should we be any less? That's the answer. If we set the things of the church aside and make them secondary in our lives, then I'm telling you, we'll become Joab. But if we fill our hearts with the Word of God and we give ourselves to the expressed worshiping of God and glorifying God and growing in His Word and encouraging one another in that Word and then living that Word in our daily lives, then we'll become David. We'll go one way or the other. And so the apostle who wrote the Hebrew epistle, remember how he put it? Where he said, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? What do I have to do to lose? Neglect. Doesn't say quit. Doesn't say reject. Doesn't say disbelieve. All it says there, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? So now I'm done. And now we can open up our invitation song there, and you can see why that the selection of that song was certainly appropriate to the lesson that we had this evening. All right, let's stand and sing that. If there's some spiritual need that you can need assistance with, this is the appropriate time to step forward and let that need be known.